This year has a little bit of a story behind it. As you all know, and if you don't know, it's hi Donnie. This has got to work. This is the third time today I mentioned somebody's name and they walked in. And the question is, where are they? So let's try it. Where is Mashiach? Right. Good. Great. Okay. So as you all know, Anne's name is Rachel Rivka. And I was thinking about, I'm going to give a shiur in Anne's memory, and I was thinking, what, if I were to identify one specific quality that embodied Anne's legacy, not just who she was, but her legacy, it was hachnasat orchim in the broadest sense. Not just opening up her doors and inviting the table, but as I said this morning, making people feel so much, you couldn't leave that house without a smile, and making people feel good as welcomed in. And so it got me thinking, and I have to give proper credit here. Years ago at the Yemeyun that I go to every summer, I heard a shiur from a woman about Rachel and Rivka and Achnasat Orchim. So it's like a slam dunk. The rest of this, though, is something that you could only tell in this decade. It wouldn't work otherwise. Because I came to this, I got a note actually from Anna where you had requested a special shiur on Monday. And so Monday night, I'm thinking, who gave that shiur? And when was it? And I started looking through all my notes, and I did not take notes or else they got lost because they were that long ago. And I started remembering. So I remember who gave the shiur. I started looking online. I'm looking furiously online, and a few things that this woman wrote, but not this year. And it turned out that we had a lecture at Herzog over for Shabbat. So Monday night, I WhatsApped her as she's driving up to Yosemite. I WhatsApped her and I said, "Do you have this woman's contact info?" Tuesday morning, that's yesterday morning, I got the contact info. I WhatsApped the woman, and the woman says, "I can't believe you remember my shiur from 14 years ago. I didn't realize 14 years ago." She said, "And I just published my first book, and it's in the book. And you can buy it here." Right? I said, "Great, but," and I'll be happy to buy it, "but in the meantime, I need it for your Yahrzeit shiur tomorrow." So she goes, "Okay, as soon as I get home, I'll send you those pages." And so by midday yesterday, because it was nighttime in Israel, I had the pages, and I was able to put together the shiur. And I hope that I can accurately represent what was in the shiur, because the shiur also takes us in somewhat unanticipated direction. That pun is deliberate, but will only become clear in a minute. And somewhat unanticipated direction as far as learning Tanakh. We have in this session, Lee pointed out this morning, we're now in our 23rd year of this shiur. But we have gone through all sorts of different disciplines that have allowed us to understand Tanakh. We've looked at archaeology, we've looked at philology, we've looked at anthropology, we've obviously looked at classic Mefarshim and modern commentators, and all sorts of other pieces of the puzzle that help us understand Tanakh better, including a number of literary devices, like structure of a text and the use of keywords and things like that. What this woman, Dr. Tamar Verdiger, when I give proper credit, and hopefully maybe gula olam, because when I said Mashiach, he didn't walk in, so let's see if we can do it that way. What her entire book is about, evidently, I haven't gotten it yet, as you all know, but evidently the entire book is something that we refer to in English as anticipatory reading. What is anticipatory reading? It's when you read something and you anticipate what's going to happen next. And a good writer will sometimes lead you along and then drop you off the cliff when something just absolutely unanticipated happens. And anticipatory reading is a very hard thing for us to do in Tanakh for a very simple reason. We know how the stories end. In other words, we're all here today, so we knew how Yitzhak Mitzrayim ended. And I'm named Yitzhak, so we know how the Akedah ended. So reading them with an anticipatory reading means you have to drop off everything you know and read it fresh, which is exactly how we're supposed to study Torah. Famous comment of Rashi on hayom. Rashi quotes the Sifri, "B'chol yom yubanecha kacharashim." Every day you should treat them like something new. Now, he's talking about the excitement of study. But to appreciate the nature of a story, you have to read it as if you don't know what's going to happen next. And this is the famous story, I think I told it 2 years ago, I heard it from Rav Samet. It's a famous story about a woman who came to Shul every Shabbos, from woman, and she would listen to Kriyat Torah. She'd stand up for Kriyat Torah, listen to Kriyat Torah. And the first year that she was showing up, after her kids had grown up, started coming to Shul, the first year she was there, during Parshat Vayeshev, she started screaming. She freaked out. And people came up to her at Kiddush afterwards and said, what was the problem? She said, how could brothers do that? How could they throw Yosef in the pit like that? She just, you know, lost it. And so the next year, everybody was kind of gearing up for her to have another hysteric attack. And they come in, and she listens to the Parsha, and nothing happens. They went up to her kiddush and said, what happened? She goes, listen, I was here last year. I know what happened. If Yosef isn't paying attention, it's on him. In other words, when you read the story, you're reading it like somebody who knows what's going to happen, and therefore you're not surprised by the ending, because you know the ending. And so that's part of the challenge of anticipatory reading, which means that when we read a story, we have to put ourselves right at this point. We don't know anything more. And she begins in this little piece by pointing out that we have and I put this in the first two sources here. I didn't put the translation because I just wanted to bring this as an example. It's an example she uses. We have a famous story of Avraham greeting people. Famous story of three people come to the tent. We've talked about the Rambam Shita, that it was a vision, but almost everybody else reads it differently, but it doesn't matter. The way the text presents it is three visitors come to the tent, and what does Avraham do? Avraham, and I put this in blue, first of all, Vayarotz Likratam, he sees them, he runs. He's an old man, and he runs to greet them, and according to the Midrash, he's just recovering from his Brit Milah, he runs to greet them. And then he offers them a little bit of water, a little bit of food. In the meantime, what does he actually do? He tells Sarah to make this huge cake and bread, and then he goes and he takes an ox, and he slaughters the ox, and he gives them meat, and he gives them cream, and he gives everything. It's great, right? Huge meal. Now, we have Avraham in mind. We know that there's a fellow who grew up or spent a lot of time with Avraham. He didn't grow up in Avraham's house, but grew up in Avraham's larger house, but who was raised to an extent by Avraham, adopted by Avraham, and separated from Avraham. And that's Lot. And so we have Lot sitting in stone. And now here's where anticipatory reading kicks in. I know what happened when visitors came, and they're called Malachim, by the way, visitors came to Avraham. I know how Avraham responded. Now I get to the beginning of chapter 19, which is source 2, and I've got two agents, two messengers, two angels, as it were, showing up at the gate of stone. And Lot's there. So what do I now expect will happen based on my anticipation? I expect the nephew will do like the uncle. And he'll say to them, come on in, I'll give you a little something to eat, and then give them a feast. We're a little disappointed because what happens? First of all, it's not Vayarotz Likratam, it's Vayakom Likratam. Right away you see it in the red. He doesn't run to them, he gets up towards them. So now that may be totally fine. It could be that they were too close to run. If you run, maybe you pass them. But the text says that maybe in order to already lower our expectations of this fellow. And then what happens? Vayasle mishte umatzoto fav yochelu. So he gives him dinner. But notice what's missing from here. And by the way, his dinner could have been just as good as Avram's. But what's missing from the text? The ox and the cream and all that stuff is missing from the text. So it could be that in fact Lot gave them a nice repast, but the way the text presents it, it's a letdown. Now the reason that's important is because the real focus of the shiur is going to be another uncle and nephew, or rather aunt and niece. We often forget about the many ways in which Lavan's family is intermarried with us. Right? Because, let's think about this. How was Lavan related to us? First of all, he's Yitzchak's brother-in-law. He, by the way, is Avraham's son-in-law. He's also Yaakov's father-in-law. Lavan is in the middle of all these relationships. We don't think of Lavan as related to Avraham. We don't even think about his relation to Yitzchak. We only think about him in relation to Yaakov, but he's connected to every one of those generations. He's also Yosef and Binyamin and Gad and Reuven. He's their grandfather. Well, maybe not of God and Reuven, of God, but certainly Reuven and Shimon and Binyamin and Yosef. He's their grandfather. So Lavan's in the middle of all this. Okay? We've got an aunt, Auntie Rivka, and we've got a niece, little Rachy. Okay? Now, we're going to do the same thing with anticipatory reading. Let's read it. What do we have in the story of Rivka? Now, what I've done is highlight in blue six particular components of the story that are significant for our story. By the way, what is the story of, which fully treated, we need a full chumash for this to have the whole thing. What is the story that occupies the middle of Parshat Chayi Sarah? The beginning is, of course, the death of Sarah and the burial and the purchase of Machpelah. The end of it is the death of Abraham and Ishmael. But in the middle, the big parak is what's called the wooing of Rebekah. That's what they like to call it. What it really is the story of Avram's slave going to Haran to find a wife for Yitzchak, praying, etc. Now, what happens in that story? See, again, we know the story so well, we don't pay attention to how magical the story is. I don't mean magical in the occult sense. We did that last week, and we'll pick it up next week. I mean magical in the sense of romance. All right, what happens? The slave comes to the well. He actually comes to the spring, and he prays. And he prays. And Vahi hu teram ki la ledaber. Before he's finished praying, what happens? Vihine Rivka yotzeit. So now, what's his purpose in this trip? He's going to find a wife. He comes, and the minute he finishes, he hasn't even said Baruch HaBach Shmo yet. Right? And Rivka comes out. And what do we hear about Rivka? Rivka is drop dead gorgeous. Right? We also know that she is family, which is part of the condition, but he doesn't know that. Right? And now, you look a little further, what happens? He's sitting there. She goes and fills up water for herself. And then what does she do? She gives him. All right? He says, let me have a little bit. She says, shtei adoni, and she gives him water. And then, v'atchal hashkoto. Look at the pasuk yotet. It's amazing. Rivka, by the way, is unbelievable in the story. I will get water for all of your camels. That's 10 camels who've gone about 800 miles. It's a ton of water. And I'm going to get it for all of them until they finish drinking. What does she do next when she needs more water? She runs. Remember Avram running? She runs to get more water. Now, she might be running to get more water because the day is only so long and there's a lot to do. But the fact the text tells us she runs is highlighting her zeal, her energy to try to make the guest feel welcome and to take care of the guest. She brings water for all of them. Now, when after that whole story, and I had to do a lot of ellipses here to make room, but after that entire story, what happens? The servant says to her, who are you? Is there somewhere for us to stay? And she goes, Bat Petuel Anochi. She identifies herself, which is great news for him because that means he hit the jackpot. And there is some place for us to stay, which means this hospitality is not just hers, it's her family's. So she can act however she wants out there, but to bring him into the house means the family is supportive of this kind of this hospitality. And what does Lavan, of all people, Lavan say to this guy? Bo Baruch Adonai. Come, you who are blessed by God. Lama tamod b'chutz, right? Come on in, right? Very nice. And now what happens? He is given a repast. And he refuses to eat till he tells a story. He tells a story, the very famous piece, because the whole story is repeated. And then what happens? He tells a story, and their reaction to it is, must be from God, Hine Rivka lefanecha kach valech, which means, it worked. So let's see all the components here. A man is coming to find a wife. The wife appears immediately. Presto. She is beautiful. She is the right person, meaning she's from the right lineage that looking for. Because Avram said, go find for my family. She has high energy in hospitality towards the suitor. And then the suitor is brought into the house with great hospitality. and the family immediately agrees to the marriage. And then what happens at the end? The marriage concludes, and as you see in the very last pasuk, Yitzchak loves Rivka. So it's what we call in Hebrew happy end. That's actually a term you could hear in a literature class in Hebrew. It's a happy end, right? Beautiful. It's tied up beautifully. So what I did is I put on the back, and I get this all from Werdiger's stuff, six components that happen in the story. So I wanted to ask a few questions. First of all, now that we know this story, we have it in our head, the story of Rivka. We roll along not that much further in the story, because Rivka comes, Rivka marries Yitzchak, they have kids, Yaakov, Esav, problem. Rivka manipulates things for Yaakov to run away, one way or the other. And the cover story of Yaakov running away is to go marry one of Laban's daughters. Meaning, Rivka's statement to Yaakov privately is, you're a dead man walking, get out of town. But what she says to Yitzchak is, if Yaakov marries one of the local girls like Esav did, I'm going to put my head in the oven. And so Yitzchak calls Yaakov and says, go to Laban and marry one of his daughters. I did the same thing, but through an agent. You go marry one of his daughters, and Hashem should bless you, and all very nice. So now we know Yaakov is coming to Haran to marry a member of Laban's family. What is our anticipation set up for us? What do we expect to have happen?
Somebody come running out and feeding his camels.
So first of all, we expect, he doesn't have camels, he's all alone. What do we expect?
Happy ending.
We expect a happy ending, but in the meantime, what do we expect? We expect the girl to show up right away. We expect the girl to be gorgeous. We expect her to be super energetic when it comes to hospitality.
Why do we expect the repetition?
Because that's what anticipatory reading does. And that's where, you know, you expect things will continue. There's the same family. This is, we expect this to be a pattern.
He would expect to have the same miracle happen to him.
It's not a miracle. It's not a miracle. No, this is miraculous.
Well, right? It's not natural.
Well, it's not natural. What are the...
He's, for the first time, he's at the well and Rivka happens.
Why? Of course. Well, where else are the girls going to get their water from? Girls come out at the end of the day to get their water. He goes there at the end of the day. He knows where she is.
Yeah, but the fact is that she's the one that comes to him first?
Or no, she's standing there and he comes, right, and says, can I have some water? Right. Right? There's nothing miraculous about it. It's great timing, and you could see Yad HaShkacha moving things, but not miraculous in the way we'd see like something supernatural.
Okay.
So we expect when Yaakov shows up that whoever this girl is, who's going to be the one he's supposed to marry, is going to pop up right away. She's going to be beautiful. She's going to be very energetic in her hospitality towards him. He's going to be welcomed nicely into the house. He's going to immediately be given her hand in marriage. And he's going to love her and he's going to be very happy. Let's see what actually happens. And again, reading it that way, and as you're reading it, you're saying, aha, yeah, I'm familiar with that. Now think about the Makot. I'll give you an example, Jason, about this. Right? Think about the Makot. When you read the Makot, you start to get a rhythm with the Makot. You know, warning, one some sort of this kind of warning, that kind of warning, makah, Paro maybe gives in a little bit, then is stubborn. You start to get a sense of a pattern at which suddenly around makat choshech, when Paro says, that's it, we're finished negotiating, you're like, well, what happened? It doesn't mean that you think something's wrong, but you realize something's different than you expected. So same thing here. Yaakov shows up. Now let's read the Parsha here. And as you can see, I put some of it in blue and some of it in red. And I had to mark the Be'er because the Be'er shows up seven times here. Right? And that has nothing to do with Be'er Sheva. But Be'er shows up seven times, a key word here. And somebody that I worked with many, many years ago used to refer to the singles Be'er of Bereshit. Right? Instead of the singles bar, the singles Be'er. And that's where the slave meets Rivka. That's where Yaakov meets Rachel. And that's, of course, where Moshe later meets Tzipora, right? The great singles Be'er of Bereshit. Okay, so I just had to put that in. And I made the Be'er green because, you know, the water was stagnant. Anyhow, now, take a look, starting from Pasuk Vav. Remember, Yaakov arrives in Haran. And by the way, we're set up for this. Remember, the big problem is we all know what's going to happen. Since our infancy, we've known 7 years and fooling him and another 7 years. And then people grow up for some reason thinking he had to wait 7 more years to marry Rachel. It's not true, but we grew up with these. We have the image, so we know the story. Don't know the story. Erase it. start fresh. What happens? Yaakov comes to Haran. Where does he get to? He finds a bear. And there's three flocks hanging around the bear. That's where they give water to the flocks from that bear. There's a big rock on the bear. Good. What would they normally do? They'd all gather and then they'd roll the rock off. By the way, simple shot. Why would they all gather before they rolled the rock off?
Couldn't do it individually.
What?
Couldn't do it individually.
Yeah, simple shot is because... What?
Because they want to make sure everyone has...
Right, exactly. Is that nobody gets to open it until we're all here, so we all make sure nobody takes too much water. Remember, a bear typically... A bear can be confused with a boar. A bear typically is not necessarily an underground aquifer, but a reservoir of water. And you use it up, it's gone. So, very likely the reason was, but the way we read it midrashically is that the rock was huge and was too heavy and there was no way to lift it off. And so... And so they did not lift it off till everybody came. All right. Vayomer lehem Yaakov, veshivatayv and alpiyah berlim koma. And then after they would feed the flock, they'd put it back. That's what they would normally do. Vayomer lehem Yaakov, achai me'ayinatem. Achai again, just like modern Hebrew. Achi is exactly like modern Hebrew, bro. Right. You walk into BB's. Happened to me. I walk into BB's. Right. And the guy says, achi mata rotza. I never met the guy before. Right. But okay, so achai me'ayinatem, vayimru mecharan anachnu. Good. Vayimru me'ayinatem et lavan ben nachor. Right, you know my uncle. Vayimru yedanu. Vayimru me'ayinatem shalom lo. Are things going for him? Vayimru shalom v'nei Rachel bito ba'a imatzon. Right, this is, by the way, Rashi points out here, a critical thing about biblical grammar. This one is Rachel bito ba'a imatzon, which means she is going to be coming. Right, and then in two lines later, it's Rachel Ba'a, which we at home, of course, pronounce Rachel Ba'a. But Rachel is coming, as opposed to will be coming. And Rashi points out that you have to make sure they put the accent in the right place. Rachel's coming. Why are you waiting around? Give water to the flock. We can't. And Donnie, that's where the can't. What does that mean? Not physically able or not allowed to. Till everybody gathers, we roll the rock off.
Why does he say go water the sheep?
No, he's saying, why are you waiting around? Because as we will learn later, Yaakov's work ethic is intense. Yaakov becomes the model. The Rambam in Hilchot Schirut talks about the level of Shmirah that you have to have and uses Yaakov as the model.
Well, they're all gathered there.
I mean,
it's a legitimate question, by the way.
Except they're not. He thinks they're all gathered. He doesn't know how many there are. It turns out there's seven or something, and he sees three. He doesn't know because he just got there. His question is, you're standing around. Why are you being lazy? The answer is, we're shepherds. That's what we're supposed to be, lazy. Odenu medaber imam. Now, notice the wording. Odenu medaber imam, which means he's still talking to them, which reminds us of the slave... Terem kilav daber. The slave had not even finished his prayer. Yaakov is still talking to these guys, and what happens? V'rachel ba'a imatzon. This is perfect. Now my anticipation is really raising. Because now Yaakov and the slave seem to be in the same position. He's at the be'er. He's involved in a conversation. And before he finishes the conversation, poof, the intended bride shows up. Now, how do I know she's the intended bride? Because she's Rachel bat Lavan. We already knew that. And what was Yaakov told? Go marry from the daughters of Lavan. Okay, good. Kiroahi. Vahi kasher ra'a Yaakov et Rachel bat Lavan achimo, vetzon Lavan achimo, v'yigash Yaakov v'yagel tevin me'al pi haber. What did Yaakov do immediately? Now, what are you seeing happening? That's why I put it in red. What are you seeing happening? Who's doing the work? And what's Rachel doing? She's standing by and watching. Right? She's standing by and watching. Vayash get son of Anachimo. Who feeds the flock? Yaakov feeds the flock. This is Rachel's job. I want you to see how different this is. Rivka comes out, and what does she do? She gives water to the stranger and to all the stranger's camels for whom she has no responsibility. What does Rachel do? She brings her own flock out, and the stranger showed up, and she lets him roll the rock up, and she lets him take care of its own, right? And she doesn't do anything.
It doesn't naturally read that way, because the minute he saw her, he runs to go roll the stone by himself, which she could...
Where do you get runs? Where do you get
runs? Where
do you get run?
While it says while... I'll go
with the Hebrew. He approached and he does the work.
Yeah, but then there's no gap.
What?
Meaning he sees her and he goes and lifts the stone that everybody is waiting for collectively to do.
And then what does he do?
He waters.
But why does he water? Why didn't she come up and say, that's my job, I'll take care of the flock? She lets him water.
Does he lift the stone by comparing apples?
It sounds like he does, yeah.
In some ways we're comparing apples with oranges. Because in the first story it's the slave that's coming as a suitor to find the bride.
Right.
In this case, it's the potential groom, the likely groom. And he wants to show, he wants to be chivalrous, and he rolls the rock off, and he walks
could be.
The flock.
I mean, he looks like he's in a state of passion.
I like that one.
I'm sympathetic.
It's romantic.
Right.
I'm with you.
I'm sympathetic to both readings. But I think we have to notice, though, that if the text is deliberately positioning these two as somewhat parallel, the way it's telling this story of him doing all of the work in opposition to the slave, sitting, watching, not doing anything, watching as Rivka just works all day, there must be something there. I'm not unsympathetic to the idea that Yaakov is just full of this ardor and energy and Rachel gets blown off her feet by what he's doing.
Is there any class system where a slave would not be permitted to do that and Yaakov would be permitted?
You would think the opposite, wouldn't you? You'd think that a slave would be the first guy. Now, remember, as we said, I think it was this year in Shir, back in Chayisara, is that Rivka doesn't know he's a slave. They look carefully at the story. She thinks he's the guy she's going to marry, which is a different problem. Vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel, that's one we all love in high school, the quote, right? Yaakov kisses Rachel, Vayisad kolo vayevk, right? Because she was his cousin, Vayisad kolo vayevk, and then he weeps. Why does he weep? Is he weeping because after this long journey, he's found what he's looking for? Is he weeping because he's just overcome with happiness? Or is he weeping because, as the Midrash says, he foresees, Ruach HaKodesh, that she won't be buried with him, which is a very odd thing to do when you first meet a girl. But in any case, Vayaged Yaakov l'Rachel, now watch this, Ki achi aviahu. Now notice this. I want you to see this again. In the conversation with the slave and Rivka, where does family come up? Now, of course, it would not make sense for the slave to say who his mishpach is, but it would make sense for the slave to say, I'm from Beit Avraham. In the meantime, who's the only one who offers information about family in the Rivka story? Rivka does. Right? In here, what happens? Yaakov brings out his mishpucha. Yaakov says, Yachi aviyahu v'chi ren rivkahu, v'taru tzvatagid l'aviyah. Now, here you could say, there's no need for her to tell us who she is because he already knows. Now, we don't hear him communicate that he knows, but somehow it's clear that he knows that she's bat levah. So she doesn't have to identify herself. Maybe, but then again, why is the text telling it this way? And now what happens? So far it sounds good. Lavan runs to him and greets him very nicely. Based on the previous thing, what would we expect to have happen? Considering the last guy, like you said, was a slave. And this really is Yaakov, his nephew. What would we expect to have happen? Based on what happened last time, come in, have dinner, sit down, have a good time. Instead, what do we hear? Now, again, it could be they fed him, but the text doesn't tell us about that. Why does the text leave us out? Leave it out. He said, okay, you know, your family stay here for a little while. And then, so Yaakov evidently has been working for him. And now Lavan says, what do you want in payment? And then in the intervening psukim, it says, Lavan has two daughters, Rachel and Leah. It describes them. And says, Vayahav Yaakov et Rachel, Vayomer. Now, by the way, what would we expect at this time? Vayahav Yaakov et Rachel, what would we expect? I want to marry Rachel. Now, it has to be for some reason Yaakov realizes he can't marry her now. It could be like I've argued in the past that she's much too young, But that seems to not work well with the rest of the story earlier. Or it could be that he realizes that...
How young was she?
What?
How young was
she? I think she was 5 or 6. Because why would Lavon lock her up for 7 marriageable years in this contract?
That would also explain why she couldn't be the she.
But she—that was her job. She didn't. She just didn't do her job that day. But every day that was her job.
To do that.
But every day that was her job. That's the thing. This day she didn't do it.
How do we know that that's her job?
Because he roat son of it. She was shepherding her father. That was her regular thing. They recognized her. She was one of the guys, right? That's. I mean, they knew her, and she recognized her, and she comes out with him.
But the other guys at the well would help her out.
Well, we don't hear that at all. We could be, but no data. Vayahav Yaakov and Rachel, right? So now, Vayavol Gam Rachel, Vayahav Gam and Rachel Milayah. After the two of them get married, meaning all the marriages happen, we find out that Yaakov favors Rachel, loves Rachel, headed over heels Rachel. All right. So, how many points of comparison and how many points of contrast are there? The girl shows up right away. The girl is pretty. Yaakov loves the girl. On the other hand, from the girl's side, how much hospitality does she show? Doesn't really show hospitality. How much hospitality? We have no idea. I've argued that he's in his 40s. Chazal says he's in his 70s. Right?
70s.
But in any case, he's certainly way older than she is. He's not a kid. There's no question he's not a kid. He's not a teenager. The hospitality in the house. Also, the ability to marry her on the spot, in order to achieve what he came for. Theoretically, what should have happened based on Rivka's and Yaakov's directions? Yaakov should have come here, immediately married one of Lavan's daughters, and then waited for a message from Rivka. Esav has cooled down and come home. Instead, he gets mired into a 14-year work contract that, you know, goes much further. So what Vertiger argues here, and I think there's a lot to recommend it, is that the very complex nature of the relationship between Yaakov and Rachel, which leads to the complexities of the relationship between Yaakov and Yosef, and therefore Yaakov and Menashe and Ephraim, and of course the Binyamin component, all start here. We start off with an image of what hospitality is supposed to look like, and Rivka has set a very high bar. And now we come to the Rachel story, and we expect things to play out similarly. Yitzchak and Rivka are absolutely monogamous. He doesn't have other wives. And even though they wait all those years to have kids, and they only have 2 kids, that's the kind of marriage they have. Very different than Yaakov. Yaakov ends up with 2 wives, and then when things don't work out, there's 2 other girls brought into the picture. Right? It's almost the opposite of Yitzchak and Rivka. And so we anticipate, as this story starts, something very similar to what happened with Rivka, and then immediately, upon seeing the behavior of the girl at the well, we're immediately, I wouldn't say disappointed, but we understand that our anticipation was not well put, not well set, and that we have to read the story differently. And that the way that things play out, because if you think about it, the Yaakov-Rachel relationship is a tragic relationship. The Yitzchak and Rivka relationship is a troubled relationship. You know, they don't seem to talk to each other except, you know, in sort of deceptive ways, right? But the Yitzchak-Rivka relationship does seem to be portrayed as a monogamous, you know, very strong union, or they're working together. The Yaakov-Rachel relationship is very troubled. It's troubled because of jealousy. It's troubled because ultimately she dies in childbirth. It's troubled because the result of that is that Yaakov then pours all his affections to Yosef, which leads to the brothers hating Yosef, which leads to Chad Gad Yadon, takes us to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Takes us all the way to Mitzrayim. And so what she's suggesting is that a lot of that begins right here at the well. And the text is telling that by building up our anticipation to see a similar story to Rivka and then seeing how different it is in the way that she doesn't respond with the kind of that kind of hospitality.
So you're saying she doesn't measure up.
Right, absolutely, doesn't measure up. And so I in reflecting back on this, and the truth is I did not remember the whole shiur 14 years later when I emailed Dr. Werdiger and asked her for this material, and I appreciate, want to thank her for being generous with it. But I did remember that it was a shiur about Rivka and Rachel and Hachasat Orchim, and it, I'll be honest with you, it got into my mind on Sunday night, and I couldn't get it out. Because knowing that Anne's name was Rachel Rivka, and that Hachnasat Orchim was like a foundation of the house and was such a central part of the experience. I know for me personally, I was the beneficiary of it in many ways and in different homes, both in even in Arizona at a lovely table for Pesach. And I thought that it would be appropriate perhaps to share this reflection both on Hachnasat Orchim, but also on this particular methodology. The book, the name of the book that she's published is called Sefer Bereishit. It just came out, and it's essentially about anticipatory reading in Sefer Bereishit and how that helps perhaps clarify and distill certain images and certain stories that happen. In the meantime, I just want to certainly fondly and lovingly remember Anne. Today is 60 Yahrzeit. It's very hard to believe it's been 6 years. And also want to wish Meitav Brachot, Mikarev Lev, to Lee on his engagement, and looking forward to celebrating many smachot together and also many warm memories that will keep us warm through the years. Thank you. Yizichra Baruch.